Welcome to the Side Hustle Project, a podcast where we explore the nitty-gritty details behind what it takes to start and grow a profitable side hustle. I'm your host, Ryan Robinson. In this podcast, I'm bringing you interviews with entrepreneurs, best-selling authors, CEOs, investors, and people just like you who are building and profiting from interesting side hustles. In today's episode, we're talking to Chase Diamond, head of growth at The Discoverer, a community of more than 1.8 million travelers across their social media accounts and email newsletter. I actually met Chase originally back in college when he was working on one of his very first projects. And Chase is an entrepreneur at heart if I've ever seen one. One of his first jobs out of college was actually with Student Brands, formerly known as Study Blue before the company was purchased by Barnes & Noble. And at that job, Chase was essentially tasked with figuring out how to grow the business. And in his early 20s, he was building and running the company's marketing team. He was brokering major partnerships and testing out new growth tactics that netted the company major returns. After that, Chase went on to start and grow a couple of his own projects, one of which was in the social media space and got acquired by their largest competitor. All of this led to Chase meeting his business partner at The Discoverer, where he's led the charge on growing the company's email list to now more than 450,000 subscribers. In this episode, we're talking about Chase's experience building multiple different side projects that have amassed millions of followers and users over the years. We're digging into the exact step-by-step strategies Chase has used to grow The Discoverer's Instagram following up to 1.5 million people, and how he's currently growing the company's email list at such an insane rate. We cover Chase's routines, his best advice for being productive with your limited time outside of your day job, and so much more. As always, you can find everything we mentioned in today's episode in the show notes at ryrob.com/podcast. That's spelled ryrob.com/podcast. Let's get into today's interview with Chase Diamond. Chase, welcome to the show.
Hey, Ryan. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for being here. So I've got a warm-up question that I've been kicking off every one of these interviews with. What book are you reading right now, or what has been your favorite recently?
Yeah, absolutely. I recently picked up Tools of Titans by Tim Ferriss. So I picked it up a few weeks ago because, you know, everyone's read it and everyone has really great things to say about it. And it's funny, that book, so many people have given me advice about how to read it. I've never gotten so much advice about, hey, this is how I read it. Like, you know, I went through and read each section from, you know, front to back, or, you know, kind of traditional. And other people are like, hey, you know, I started with the people that I knew. I read their interviews and I kind of jumped all around. For me personally, I started in kind of the wealthy section. So it's kind of broken up into three parts. It's healthy, wealthy, and wise. And the wealthy part was kind of the part that I was interested in just because of the people that were featured were kind of the people that I knew the most about. So I've probably read about a dozen or two dozen interviews so far. And I think I've enjoyed Reid Hoffman's the most. And I'm not sure if that's because I'm biased and I love LinkedIn and I love everything that he's done, or if the advice was just that great. So I've been reading Tools of Titans, and I do a lot of also online reading of blogs and websites. So because I'm working on a business in the travel space, I've been reading a site called Skift, kind of just staying up to date with the latest travel news and travel info. So yeah, I think those are kind of the two that I'm consuming a lot of my time.
That's awesome. So I think you and I first met back while we were studying at Chapman University. We were both in the business program, I want to say, and it was through the Entrepreneurship Club. So back then, when you were in college, were you working on any particular businesses going through school?
Yeah, I was doing a lot. You know, I was playing soccer at Chapman. I was doing the fraternity thing. I did like the Entrepreneurship Club, which is how we got connected. And I was just kind of learning from other people and doing as many internships as possible. So I did an internship with like the New York Times when I was working on their kind of digital subscription platform. You know, I did that for a while, kind of marketing that to the college campus. I was working for an education technology business. They had very school specific course documents. It's called Course Hero. So in college, most of what I was doing was really trying to just learn because I was passionate about business, passionate about marketing, you know, had an idea of what I wanted to do post-grad. So I was really trying to set myself up to get that job or to start my own business post-graduation.
Tell us then about what you did after graduating from Chapman.
Yeah, so after graduation, I moved up to Los Angeles to work for an education technology business called Study Mode. And I got connected with the president of the company on LinkedIn. He had reached out through kind of some of the past work I had done. And he literally said to me, hey, I'm bringing you in. Your job's going to be to figure out, you know, a product that's really engaging to students. And that's about it. So I joined him, super excited. Had no clue what I was getting myself into. He didn't know what we were going to do. So when I was there within my first couple weeks, I came up with the concept of this kind of Facebook meets Google Drive. So connecting students on specific college campuses to one another so they could share study documents. So they could meet up for in-person study groups and they could collaborate on, you know, kind of test prep. So we ended up rolling out that product to about 50 schools, and we launched at the largest schools based off enrollment size. So those are like the Arizona states, the Penn states, kind of the Florida states. And essentially the premise was pretty simple. If you gave a document, you ended up getting access to the entire library of documents at your school. So I ended up putting together a team for that, and we ended up kind of building it out over the course of about 6 months. We grew it to about 500,000 students. So we kind of promoted primarily through college Facebook groups. You know, going to school at Chapman, that was a place that I got a lot of information about, you know, school happenings, you know, everything from social life about parties to, hey, you know, I'm selling my textbook. So it was just a really great place where students congregated. And I was able to kind of mass get into these college Facebook groups and able to promote these really organic and genuine messages in these universities. And of course, you know, if I was able to throw up a document in the university and students saw it, it really was kind of gold to them. So worked at this company called Study Mode, who actually just recently got acquired by Barnes & Noble, which is pretty cool. A lot of buddies still work there, so I was super stoked for them. So that was really kind of one of my first experiences, you know, building a product from scratch, you know, overseeing product management and the marketing of it, and growing it to about, you know, 500,000 users.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like it was a very entrepreneurial role, kind of like intrapreneurship, I guess you could say. And I know you're a huge growth guy now. So I'm curious, like back when you had that job, were you able to sort of like automate anything about the process of growing into like new campuses or like spreading throughout an existing campus? Or was it a pretty manual process?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. Everything I do in the beginning is manual with the hopes of automating it. So in the beginning, I literally was doing, you know, everything by hand, you know, really kind of trying to figure out, you know, what types of things worked. So I spent a lot of time in the beginning around kind of call to actions and copywriting, you know, manually writing, you know, this message versus this message and kind of testing the response. So how many people would like my message on Facebook? How many people would comment on it? How many people would actually click through? And kind of once I felt like I had a good recipe for being able to scale this, I ended up using a Facebook bot. So with this Facebook bot, it's called Mass Planner. Today, I think Facebook and Instagram actually kind of shut down the features on it, unfortunately. But how I used it was I was able to use it as a search tool first. So I knew for all the college Facebook groups that they had the same kind of structure. So they all had the school or the university name plus class of. So I would literally search class of 2018. Class of 2019, and the tool would spit back to me all the lists of groups that match that criteria. So to kind of go one step above and beyond that, you could set limits like, you know, return to me every single group that has above a certain number of users. So I knew kind of through experiments that groups over 1,000 people perform better than groups under 1,000 people. And it makes sense, you know, the more eyeballs, the more people in the group, the more chance for engagement, more often than not, the better it will do. So I was, you know, plugging into this thing, you know, give me this, give me that, and it would spit back this list. Then I would use that same tool to auto-join all those groups. So I was joining, you know, college group after college group, and today I'm actually in over 1,000 college Facebook groups, which is pretty nuts. So it's been hard to use Facebook socially anymore. Everything I kind of use Facebook, and even my personal social networks on Instagram and Twitter, has really been for work, just because I love what I do and it works. So long story short, after kind of auto finding the groups, auto joining the groups, I was able to auto post in the groups. And one thing that I had done and figured out was the more social proof a post had, the better it was going to perform. So I had other people, either at that university that I would say like, hey, you know, Ryan, like, you know, we went to Chapman, I'm going to be posting about this shared school drive. You know, the more people that post to it, it benefits both of us. So do you mind liking and commenting on my post? So I would just ask people like, hey, do you mind liking and commenting on my post? And I always saw that the post that had that engagement that I had a spark kind of originally, you know, people would just, for lack of a better word, they had FOMO. They would just be like, hey, get me involved. Even though sometimes I don't think they know what they were getting themselves into. And I've noticed too, sometimes on Facebook, if you see a post that's viral and everyone's doing something, for whatever reason, you kind of just do it as well.
That's fair. That's fair. I see tons of those. They kind of like come in waves too, you know, like ice bucket challenge, like that whole cycle of things. It's funny. So yeah, man, tell me then about side projects. So I know you had a couple of side projects kind of around when you were graduating or shortly thereafter. Which one came first?
Yeah, absolutely. So while I was in study mode and really figured out how to kind of take products from, you know, zero to a few hundred thousand users, I started doing some consulting actually with a few buddies from Chapman. So we started a marketing agency called Idea Shop. And the whole notion of that agency was around kind of content creation, social media growth and management, and growth hacking. So with that agency, you know, we did a various amount of things. So one of the projects we worked on was for an anonymous location-based polling app, and they were targeting college students. So I ended up using the network of college Facebook groups that I was in to promote those the app downloads. And within a month and a half, I think we drove about 250,000 clicks and about 30,000 actual app downloads for that one company. So we were doing things like that to, you know, creating content and growing like a protein company's social media channels, which ultimately drove sales. So we were kind of all over the place, you know, working with different apps and different websites, mainly on sales and clicks and download type of things.
Do you remember what you guys were charging or how you were like structuring deals with these types of clients?
Yeah. So early on, a lot of the work we did was pay for performance. You know, we're these young college guys with, you know, a little bit of experience. So we just reached out to people saying like, hey, look, you know, we're not your traditional marketing agency. You know, we're this group of kind of young hustlers, young entrepreneurs. Let us work with you and it's not going to cost you anything up front. We'll work out something that makes sense for both of us. So everything was around, yeah, like cost to acquire a user for a download. So for that one app, it was called What's Goodly. They paid us $1 per download and they'd pay us obviously after the fact. So we ended up doing pretty well with them in a short period of time. For some of the other types of deals, you know, to manage content and manage social accounts, I think we charged like the protein company $3,000 a month. You know, we worked with a music company that had an app called Wave Music App, who was also another Chapman kid. So we worked with him on an ambassador program, managing content and managing all marketing efforts. And I think he actually paid us like $10,000 a month. So we ended up doing, you know, pretty solid revenue for kind of starting out. For me, this was a side hustle. For the guys I worked with, it started kind of as a side hustle that turned into a full-time thing for them. So we were kind of balancing, you know, me being part-time, them being full-time and whatnot.
Yeah. So at what point in the evolution then did you guys get into SoundJuice?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been working with a buddy named Jared Stevens, actually. I think you might know Jared. He went to Chapman as well. So he and I did the marketing agency together. And actually at the marketing agency, we acquired a dating site called Bernie Singles. I'm not sure if you had heard of it, but it was kind of this epiphany that we had. We're like, you know, we're this marketing agency, we're early, we want to have, you know, a case study of our own that we, you know, acquired. We started this business that went viral. So within a few weeks of launch, kind of pre-virality, we bought Bernie Singles on Flippa.com for like $5,000. You know, like our first paycheck from our client went straight to buying that company. And we ended up through Facebook groups promotion and through PR. We ended up having that site reach about 1.5 million visitors in the first month and a half. And that for us was such a great experience in terms of, you know, working with PR and, you know, improving our Facebook group posting and just having this case study around like, there's this group of young entrepreneurs who do marketing and they own Bernie Singles. It was a really great way to kind of introduce ourselves via email.
And so for people listening today who don't know what Bernie's Singles is, can you describe it?
Yeah, so it's really silly, but it was basically, we launched around Valentine's Day of 2016. And it was a dating site for people that supported the presidential candidate, Bernie Sanders. So a lot of people were creating friendships and relationships on Facebook. And we kept seeing that they wanted, you know, kind of a more meaningful way to connect. So we thought the evolution to dating would make sense. So we acquired the site and we kind of ran with it. And I think we ended up having about 25 or 30,000 actual members. We experienced a bunch of site outages because we built it on WordPress and the traffic was not what we had expected it to be.
So what happened to the site? Like, is it still up today? Like, are people still meeting on there? What's its status?
Yeah, so today it's not currently active, but we've kind of had talks lately of kind of, you know, reinvigorating it. I know a lot of people are very interested in the political landscape as it is today, for better or for worse. So we think, you know, there might be an opportunity in the coming months to kind of revive the whole Bernie platform and Bernie movement and see what we could get going. We've got a, you know, solid email list and we, you know, are in some good Facebook groups that are still pretty active. So that's kind of where we're at there. And kind of to get to your other question about SoundJuice. So after Jared and I had that experience with Bernie Singles, we're like, hey, this is really fun. Like, let's go build something else. So we ended up licensing technology for an Instagram bot from a company in Russia, which is really random, but we got connected with this guy through another bot group and we licensed the technology. So I think we had paid like $500-$600 to get this thing up and running. And we kind of just put it on autopilot and we were running bots and sending, you know, cold emails trying to grow this thing. And we did that for a couple of months. And then a company called Social Envy, who's one of the larger players in the space, had approached us like, hey, like, you know, we're pretty much buying out all the competition. Would you guys be interested in getting acquired? And, you know, if not, we're going to do what you guys do. We're like, all right, well, you know, we're not spending that much time on it. Like, what's your offer? So they had offered us like $10,000 for it. And we'd only been doing it for like 2 months. And, you know, we'd made a few thousand dollars each. And we're like, we don't really have the time. And we're not super invested in this anymore. Like, let's sell it. So we ended up selling that off, you know, within a few months.
No, that's awesome. That's great. Especially when they're telling you blatantly like, hey, we're just going to do this if you don't sell it to us.
Yeah. And I actually have remained kind of in contact with the owner of that company that has bought us and they're absolutely killing it. I think last month they had like almost 2 million visitors to their site that, you know, they're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on social and they have really great branding, really great retention. So, you know, they probably would have destroyed us. So I think we made the smart move.
Yeah. Cool. So that was essentially the first side project that you sold. And I'm guessing that somehow eventually leads you to the Discoverer. Can you tell us about what the Discoverer is?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Discoverer is kind of this global community of travelers, photographers, bloggers, you know, social influencers who've kind of brought together to share their best travel tips and advice. So we send right now a weekly kind of edition that features a new destination, which gives our subscribers kind of like an inside look at different places around the world. And kind of the reason that we started it is, you know, one, we're super passionate about travel. And two, every travel-related thing we saw was either like a travel-related kind of confirmation email, like, hey, Chase, you booked your flight to Bali, like, here's your confirmation email. Or it's like, hey, here's this top 10 list of beaches, you know, in Mexico. But a lot of those top 10 beaches in Mexico are all because advertisers are paying for that to be the top 10 and they have hotels there. So we really were kind of tired of the whole clickbait, you know, content that was sponsored. And we really wanted to give this organic, genuine, true look at what a place is like and what people who visit there or live there have to say about it.
Yeah. And just to run through a couple of your stats that I could see, at least on the website, you guys have a community of around like 1.5 million followers and currently email subscribers around 300,000, which is insane considering you pretty much started it this year, 2017, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So on Instagram, across about a dozen and a half to two dozen Instagram accounts, we have a total of about, 1.4 to 1.5 million followers, we actually have about 2.2 million total followers. So a decent amount of our audience follows one or more of our accounts. And ideally, we like that account to be our main account, the Discoverer, which is the and then DSCVRR. And then on our email list, yeah, we have about 315,000 email subscribers.
So tell me about, in particular, the email subscribers. How did you get 300,000 email subscribers in, you know, we're talking about 8 months here, probably total?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've had a pretty diverse kind of acquisition strategy to grow our email list. You know, Facebook has been really great to us, both on the ad buying side, as well as the kind of organic Facebook page and Facebook groups. We spent a lot of time in particular on Facebook groups. I know we've been kind of talking about the work I've done on Facebook. So Facebook to me in groups in particular is something that I really know. We have about 20,000 members in our Facebook groups. So we have one main group called Discoverers, which has about 16,000 and something followers. And we have two smaller kind of Facebook groups for travel influencers, so people that have 5,000 or more followers, and then one for girl discoverers. And Facebook has been a really great place. Facebook's been super nice to us lately. They uploaded the ability to survey potential group members. So we ask potential group members three questions. So we're asking them, how did you hear about us? Which helps us figure out, you know, what channels we're pushing on that work. So, you know, a lot of people are saying, hey, I heard about it through email. So in all of our emails, we have call to actions to follow us on Instagram. Hey, join our Facebook group to meet other discoverers and share your discoveries. The second question we're asking is, where are you located? So we plan to help connect people that are located in the same geographic region to one another. So we're recording all the data. You know, a lot of people are from France. A lot of people are from LA. So we're looking at places where we have a high concentration of users and where we can kind of do events and connect people in person in the future. And the third and final question, which is super important to us, is we ask, you know, what is your email? So those are kind of the three questions we're asking. So first, Facebook's been really great to us for those reasons. In addition to kind of getting that contact info, like I said, it's been a really great way for our audience and our community to connect. And they're providing a lot of great content that goes onto our Instagram and our other social accounts, that goes into our weekly emails. And it's going to be blog content that we use in the future. So Facebook's been awesome.
So talking about Facebook, can we go like super granular? So, you know, like, are you going into groups that have a large number of members already related to travel topics and then like promoting yourself directly? Or are you like starting individual conversations with people? Like, what does that process look like for growing your audience through Facebook groups?
Yeah, absolutely. So one has definitely been, you know, posting in the groups that exist today, you know, which makes a lot of sense. They're all there for a common reason. They all have an interest in travel. So, you know, we're kind of, you know, putting a spin on it like, hey, you know, you're in this group. We know you like travel. We have this, you know, email kind of content business where we're actively looking for people to participate, to be shared, to give content. Now we have 300,000 people on our email list. We've got this network of 1.5 million followers. So we're really kind of pushing the things that we've achieved because that gets people really excited. And all the people that we're featuring are people from our Facebook group or people that have used our hashtag on Instagram. So we're really kind of incentivizing people to share the content. And after people, you know, join our group and after people use our hashtag and do the things that we want them to do, we always say thank you. So we have a community team that is reaching out and, you know, liking someone's post that has, you know, used our hashtag. And they're saying, hey, thank you for doing that. Like, you've just been featured. So we're really kind of playing on that whole fact that people want to be noticed and want to be seen. And that's why they're using social. I think social has really evolved from being just a place where people communicate with their friends to a place where, you know, people really do want to be seen and be noticed. So we're definitely playing, you know, to that for advantage. So other Facebook groups has been huge. Like I mentioned, as our email list has kind of grown, we're always promoting, hey, you know, join other discoverers and share your discoveries, you know, in our Facebook group. So that's driven a bunch of people. You know, on Instagram, using our large network, you know, we're constantly promoting our Facebook group. So those three have kind of been the main things that we've kind of done. And as a result, a lot of people have been sharing it with their friends. And a lot of people are starting to find us just by searching for groups on Facebook.
And have you guys been good at converting Instagram followers into email subscribers as well? And then if that's a yes, what would you say is kind of like the best practice or some advice for people who want to convert their Instagram following into email subscribers?
Yeah, so Instagram is definitely a big driver for us. I think it's probably one of the top three. And we have, you know, we're always having call to actions around, you know, follow our main account. And when people land on our main account, you know, they're seeing kind of the bio and the link to join. We've really been taking advantage of going live on Instagram, either ourselves or, you know, with influencers. So, you know, we have, you know, on average, you know, a number of thousands of people that watch our live videos. We're able to communicate with them. And people are asking questions, we're engaging. So I think by showing that we care about the community and we're putting the community first, people are really interested in finding out more. You know, and with the actual story post, we always have, you know, kind of a way for people to easily get onto our website through like read more or swipe up. So those kinds of things have gone a long way. Every time we launch an email edition, you know, our story is about people that were in them. You know, we're posting on our channels like, hey, like, what are your thoughts on the email that just went out? So I think we're always kind of reminding people that like they are missing out if they haven't subscribed. So that's been really helpful in getting people to, you know, visit the site and give us a chance. And, you know, we always let them know if we're not delivering on what we've promised, you can always unsubscribe. So I think for what we're doing as kind of a weekly kind of content business, it's not a huge commitment to give your email address to kind of take a peek, because they know at the end of the day, they can always unsubscribe and we respect that.
So one thing you guys are doing that I really like is that, you know, you in particular, you're using your experience and your skill set to grow this current project of yours, right? So you've got, you know, the years of experience with Facebook groups. You guys built a sort of automated Instagram sort of engagement tool. Are you doing anything to automate the process of growing this audience and really scale it beyond just like your individual efforts at this point?
Yeah, I would say we are. So kind of before I go into that, another really thing that's been big for us in terms of subscriber growth has been sweepstakes and giveaways. Those have been amazing for us. So, for example, as a travel business, we're aligning kind of the things that we're giving away, promoting to our traveler kind of interest. So our first giveaway was something around giving away a round trip ticket for two. So airfare was included for two people. You had 5 nights stay, and then you had dinner for two. And this was all in Buenos Aires. So using kind of social and using the email list, we drove about 25,000 entrants to that sweepstakes. So that has been a really big one that, in a lot of ways, because we've built our audience, has made it super easy to scale and roll out. So that's been helpful. But to answer your question, so in addition to kind of things like those that leverage our existing audience to scale, you know, we're using a lot of tools around, you know, automating the communication between different apps. Like we're using Zapier to, you know, automate, you know, collecting information and, you know, sending an email to someone that has reached out to us. You know, we're automating posts. So we have a network of accounts. So we're automating and scheduling out weeks in advance Instagram posts. So we're using a tool called Grum. It's grum.co. And that's automating all of our posting. So we have a content and community team that spend, you know, a few hours every Monday kind of scheduling out for the next month. What those posts are going to be, which frees up a lot of their time, you know, during the week to, you know, reach out to people and kind of get people in this funnel of inviting them to join our group and inviting them to, you know, check out our Instagram and inviting them to use our hashtag. So a lot of the automation is around kind of inviting people to do things that are already in the community, you know, asking them to share. And, you know, we do use an Instagram bot for some things. In particular, we do an Instagram bot for liking. For some of the things that we really want to be authentic and genuine in, it's really manual. So, for example, commenting on photos and messaging users is done through our community team, because those are things that, you know, you've all seen bots kind of go wrong, where people say things that are just so spammy. So we're really kind of conscious and aware, just kind of seeing what I've seen and knowing what we know, making sure that we automate the things that are kind of easy to do and, you know, hard to mess up. So for example, you know, we can auto like all the people that use our hashtag, but we're actually having our team go through and say like, you know, hey, Ryan, saw that you used our hashtag or saw that you tagged us. Like, thank you for doing that. And like messaging you, like, hey, Ryan, you know, we love that photo. We've scheduled it to go out next week. So I think it's definitely a mix of automation and kind of having meaningful conversations with our audience. I think those two kind of in tangent have been really important and valuable for us.
So one of the things you mentioned earlier is that, you know, for the most part, or maybe in its entirety, the content that you guys are using for your sort of destination guides are user-generated content. So the people using your hashtags, people sending you their photos, maybe people you reach out to and work with in a more like hands-on basis. And I guess at this point, when you have such a large community, the value props are clear to someone who would want to work with, you know, these people that have, you know, 1.5 million followers, 300,000 subscribers. So going back to, say, the earlier days when you didn't have those huge stats, what were you saying to the people that gave you content? Like, what did those relationships look like? What kinds of value props were they interested? How did you get them to, you know, essentially give you free content, if that's what happened?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, today it's definitely kind of overwhelming how much content we've had. We have, you know, somewhere kind of north of 20,000 people have actually submitted content about a destination. So we're definitely in the process of rolling out a blog so we can start featuring some of that content, because the stuff that people are giving us is absolutely incredible. Like the most amazing photos, you know, I've ever seen, and just like the coolest discoveries and experiences that people have had. And that really is our mission at the end of the day, is to inspire discovery. So like you said, today it's really easy. We have an excess of content. And, you know, we tell people, like, hey, thank you for submitting this. This is amazing, because it really is. And, you know, we have plans in the coming months to start featuring all this content, which will do a number of things for us. One, it will show the audience that we care and we are putting them first. Two, you know, we're really hoping from like an SEO kind of strategy, having all of this content will start to rank for, you know, kind of some long tail keyword searches. And two, you know, as people get featured on something like the Discover that has, you know, this large community, they're always sharing it with their friends. Like, hey, like, I was just featured on the Discover, like, check this out. So, you know, we've literally had people tell us, like, we just mass emailed our whole contact book because we're so excited that we were included in your email. And people were always posting their story, like, hey, I was just featured on the Discover. But in the early days, it wasn't that easy, and it wasn't necessarily like that. I think it was kind of a repetitious thing where, you know, we were manually reaching out to people whose content that we had to find kind of outbound that we were actually looking for, and just saying to them, like, hey, look at, like, you know, we're tired of the clickbait content, and we really want to produce this thing that's, you know, genuine and helpful. You know, we don't have much today, but we really want to get started, and we have to start somewhere. Like, would you mind submitting content? And everything we've done has been around giving people credit. So in all of our emails, we have link outs to people's Instagram accounts and to their blogs. So from the beginning, you know, it's never really been just about us. We're really wanting kind of to share in the recognition and the traffic. So I think when we kind of told people that in the beginning, we came across very authentic, and we've kind of held true to that. So yeah, in the beginning, it's been, you know, a lot of cold emailing, like, hey, Ryan, I saw you on Instagram. Oh, I love what you're doing. Like, will you please help? And like, you know, hey, Ryan, like, you know, sorry to bother you again. You may not have seen this, but, you know, we really want your content and really want you to contribute. And if you don't mind, that would help us a lot. So I think after we kind of started, you know, reaching out and re-reaching out to the same people kind of over time and just asking them for help and saying, you know, we can't promise this is ever going to, you know, be seen by that many people, but, you know, based off what we've done in the past and what we're trying to accomplish, I think the mission was really important. And I think people really saw that and wanted to get involved. And At the end of the day, like I mentioned, people do want to be seen. And we focus a lot on what I'd call micro influencers. So people that have, let's say, between 1,000 to 50,000 followers. So the people that do have influence, but aren't the ones that are being paid and kind of looked after like all the big brands are. You know, they all want the people that have 100,000, 500,000, a million people. So by kind of playing into that middle ground where like these people have influence and they're doing cool things, but they're not really being reached out to, I think that's what we really did well.
So are you guys doing anything yet to monetize your community?
We're not. You know, we go back and forth. So there's a company that we're planning on work with in the beginning called Live Intent. And basically the best way to describe them is they're Google AdSense for emails. So they would, you know, integrate all the partners and the advertisers into our email with a snippet of code. And we've had that contract signed with them probably for the past 2 or 3 months. And we go back and forth, you know, every single day about like, hey, you know, is this next edition going to be that edition where we roll this out? And we keep going back to no. So we've had, you know, a lot of inbound efforts from people saying like, hey, like I want to sponsor one of your editions. Like, you know, I want to pay you guys to build a sweepstakes for me. So we've had a lot of inbound requests, but we've kind of been on the fence about that. We really are pushing this whole delivering the experience and inspiring discovery. So we haven't monetized today. We obviously have plans to in the future, but we're just trying to figure out the right way to do it. And we're talking to a bunch of our community members, asking them like, hey, you know, if we integrated ads into our email, like, would that be okay with you? And if so, like, you know, does this look fine? So we're early right now. We'll probably do it in the future, but we want to make sure that we're really transparent with our community. And we're doing it in a way that they understand why we have to do it. Because at the end of the day, we're a business. We have expenses. We have bills. But, you know, we're very mission focused today.
How are you guys funding the business right now? Is it a side project for you, or are you in this full time?
So it started kind of the concept phase as a side thing. So I had another job. I was doing some consulting, kind of rounding out SoundJuice. And I connected with another entrepreneur. And we kind of had the idea for this parent company called Inbox Lab. And we don't have a website for it yet. We're actually working on it. We've been putting all of our energy into the Discoverer. But we had the idea of rolling out very content-centric, email-centric businesses. So businesses that provide the experience through email, similar to like the Skim and the Hustle. And we kind of been talking for months about which one we wanted to do. And we kept going back to travel just because there was such an opportunity. And it was one that we were really inspired by, and we know others were as well. And one thing that's been really helpful is the fact that travel is so social. You know, people are sharing and people love to talk about it and people love planning trips. So the business is all self-funded through my co-founder. He had an exit recently from his other business. So we've been really fortunate to be able to, you know, bootstrap this and build it the right way, which isn't a luxury I had at, you know, other projects in the past and, you know, not necessarily one I'll have in the future. But it's really interesting kind of to see the things that you do well and do right when you don't have to rush monetizing. Whereas in the past, like, you know, I made dozens of mistakes, you know, launching too early and, you know, trying to get people to pay too early, or, you know, the product didn't deliver or the value proposition wasn't there. So yeah, today we're bootstrapped and really fortunate that monetization isn't on the focus of our minds. Mm-hmm.
So I want to transition over to a few of my frequently asked questions for you. I designed them to be short on my end. Your answers do not need to be equally so.
Okay.
Do you have any particular strategies or pieces of advice for people listening here today that want to get their first 100 subscribers, followers, leads, whatever that sort of early metric may be?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it starts with first having a really important mission and to have some kind of competitive advantage. Like, what are you able to do that someone else can't? And that could be something, you know, like you said, from acquiring leads, the first 100 people for cheaper, or it could be, you know, delivering a better experience or having a better brand. So, you know, I think it first starts with, you know, figuring out the platforms that your ideal customer is on and figuring out the ways that you can reach them there. So for example, like on Instagram, if you were in the travel space, and I guess for any really vertical for that matter, you would identify people that are using certain hashtags. So if they're using hashtag travel or hashtag the discoverer, you know that they're interested in travel. So you could comment on their photo, you could DM them, you could, if they have an email in their bio, you can send them a cold email. So I think there's a ton of ways on social to reach people and just have kind of the initial conversations about, like, hey, this is what I'm working on. I'm early. I'd love your, you know, unsolicited, you know, 100% honest feedback. And you know, if you have a product that has something to offer that you can give them as a result of giving you their time, that's awesome. So I think kind of trading whatever your business has to offer in value to someone for their time, if there's an alignment, makes sense. So yeah, I guess I'd go to social, talk to friends, talk to people who are your ideal customer, and just see what they're interested, see if they'd use it, and just have more conversations.
Have you had any failures with the Discoverer in particular yet? Anything that jumps out in particular?
Failures, definitely. I mean, I think as someone in marketing and growth, more often than not, your experiments fail. So, you know, we've tried Reddit ads that were just too expensive to, you know, be able to monetize in the future off of. You know, for us, we don't know for certain, but we think kind of the ideal customer acquisition price for us for an email is 5 cents. So, you know, we were spending $1 to acquire a user. So it's just not something that's going to scale. So I think things like that were, as a marketer, doing things with a certain metric in mind and, you know, spending more money than you have to is definitely a failure. You know, we're obviously, as an email business, you know, always trying to optimize deliverability. So there's times when, you know, our deliverability is great and other times when it's not as high. You know, as someone that's only mailing weekly, there's a lot of challenges that come with it from a deliverability standpoint, especially being kind of early on. So we've only actually sent about 8 or 9 editions. So we're really still trying to prove to our email service provider that we are, you know, established and legit and everyone has opted in. So I think kind of things around, yeah, just working on deliverability, kind of making sure it's consistent, you know, making sure we're not spending too much money to acquire subscribers. I think those are the first things that come to mind.
So what would you say has been the best investment you've ever made in the context of validating an idea for a business? And that could be in the form of time, money, online tools, products, services, education, or otherwise.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you have the idea or a concept in mind, it's really important to test it before you invest a lot of money and more time into it. So I think for us, like, you know, we threw up a quick landing page within, you know, a day or two, started, you know, sending people to the landing page and validating that people are, in fact, interested in a service like this. So I think that's something that, you know, we've done pretty well for all the businesses I've been a part of is validating, you know, interest early on. So I think that part's super critical for a business to be successful. I could offer more. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's perfect. And I actually had a follow-on question to that for you. So in particular with the Discover, when you said you threw up a landing page and started driving traffic to it, are we talking about like Facebook ads or did you already have like a community that you were driving people from?
Both. We wanted to test early on a few things. So the first and most important was, do people want this? And the second was, okay, people want this. And if we build this, how are we going to scale this? So we were testing different channels from the beginning, trying to figure out, you know, as soon as this thing is ready to go live, like where are we going to invest our time, energy, and resources? So, you know, we were running like Facebook lead ads, trying to get people to subscribe. I mean, they're really great. 2 clicks and people were subscribed. You know, we were using the Instagram network that we had built to drive traffic there. So, you know, we're testing everything from like, you know, will people click on a link from Instagram? You know, if I post in a Facebook group, now, will people engage with my post? So I think kind of having a diverse acquisition strategy of traffic is really important in the beginning, just that way you know like how cost effective it's going to be or how expensive it's going to be. So like, you know, for the Discoverer, if we didn't have capital and we saw that it's going to take this much money to acquire users, you know, are we going to have to go raise capital on the notion that we could do this and make money? Or, you know, are we going to be able to, you know, growth hack this through, you know, Facebook groups and other channels?
I love that. Well, I'm excited to see where you guys take the community over the coming years, hopefully, right? So, Chase, can you tell us, everyone listening here today, where they can go to learn more about you, the Discoverer, and everything else you're up to?
Yeah, absolutely. I love Instagram. I'm on Instagram. So my handle is Chase, C-H-A-S-E, Hunter, H-U-N-T-E-R, and then Diamond without the A, so D-I-M-O-N-D. That's a great place. LinkedIn as well. If I can give my personal email, I'll give it. It's chasediamondnoa@gmail.com if anyone wants to reach out with any questions or comments.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Side Hustle Project, I would love your support. Head on over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating. And as always, you can catch every episode of the Side Hustle Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in.